My next guest is a superstar. Be where your feet are. He always says that. Yogi Roth, Pac-12 Network. You can catch him on the Pac-12. They're doing a kind of a new rap show. I guess it's not new, but without games, it's new. They're doing a new show on the Pac-12 Network, and Yogi Roth is joining us. How are you, man?
I'm good, man. You know, like everybody, multitasking in 2020. So trying to live my best version of that right now. Couple kids. So I'm hanging. I'm competing, man. How are you?
We're good. Today we're doing, as part of our programming, our Radiothon and auction for the BFT Foundation, which helps kids in art and music and education and athletics. And maybe if you could we start by just talking about what you did that wasn't, that maybe as a kid helped shape you? And I know we know football, but what else shaped Yogi Roth?
I think my community was huge. But to be honest, I don't know if we've ever talked about this, but I don't know if you know, my mom's a refugee. And today is actually, ironically, that I'm talking about it, she passed away a month ago today. Yeah. And her parents were both Holocaust survivors. So when I was a kid and I was 8, 10 years old, I would sit across the table from them and I would hear stories about my grandfather who was shot 8 times and played dead for 2 days and a gypsy brought him back. You know, my grandmother ran away from a home because her whole family got murdered when she was 12 on the way home from 6th grade. And it's kind of graphic, but they were axed to death. And she went on the run. And those two met on a train. And I always felt as an athlete that my superpower was I had this grit to me. You know, I had this fight to me. And I always attributed to them. So, yeah, my love for sport came from my community and the experience. But my desire, I think, outlast anybody on planet Earth, which is arrogant, but it's how I feel. Came from that because I knew I had this hidden strength that not a lot of people knew about. Yeah. And it was a part of me and my story. And that's always been my superpower to a degree of like, man, I have this DNA that's a fighter, you know, that's about humanity. Atika Aulam is the Hebrew word for, you know, make the world a better place. And I've always felt that like my job was to do that even when things got dark, because that's how they were. Like their lives were hellish, man. Nobody wants to live in a concentration camp as they did. But they always saw the good in people. So I think I can be criticized for being too optimistic at times, but I think that's BS. I think it's like just how I want to live, and that's how I want to view the world.
We need more of that. We need it now more than ever. And, you know, I wrote a column about Sam Noyer, the quarterback at Colorado, this morning, and I wrote it in part because, like, I needed to tell a good story, like for my soul, Yogi. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I loved reading that. And Sam is what an amazing young man, as you know. And I texted him after first win he had, and I was like, I don't think I've seen a player have more fun than him. Right? In that position, it's all about, like, my brand and my draft status and my, you know, can I get verified on Instagram? Like, and he's all about, like, just having fun and competing, and that's what sports are. And I see high school kids, they lose that part because of recruiting, and it becomes a business, and then they don't love the game. I call it the wonder switch. Like, their switch gets turned off by external influences. And for Sam, man, it is fully on, and that's because of that staff there and, you know, Coach Jarrell, Coach Shiverini. You obviously know their quarterback coach well, formerly at Oregon State for a long time. So I'm a huge fan of his story. I think right now it's the best one on the West Coast.
Yogi Roth, Pac-12 Network, is with us. For people who don't know, Yogi was a walk-on at University of Pittsburgh. You eventually earned a scholarship. You eventually transitioned into coaching. You're at USC on the staff there. Now you're doing a whole bunch of things as a storyteller, a podcast, a newsletter, you're broadcasting, documentaries. I love that you're kind of in the world that way. What motivates you to do that?
Well, you know, I think for me, I've always enjoyed being a jack of all trades, right? Like, I think you got to go to your interests. But I didn't have any organization around until probably 5 years ago. I met with a guy you probably had on before, Jeremy Darlow, who is kind of the guru in marketing, and a guy named Ken Black, who you should have on. I've talked about before on your show, who ran innovation at Nike for 25 years. And I did a year with them, hardcore of like, let me assess where my life is creatively, you know, and just went deep. And where I netted out is like, what I'm about is seeking and uncovering humanity in sports. And for a majority of the year, that sport is college football. And that's what I'm about. So everything to me goes through that lens. So you might see, we did this documentary, we have this podcast, or whatever. And to me, it all goes through the same lens. And when it doesn't siphon through that, it's an easy no. And that's where I net out. And I think as a storyteller, if you just think you're going to have a microphone in front of you, you're crazy. And I tell students all the time, like Ashley Adamson and I taught a class during the pandemic when there's no football. We had a ton of Pac-12 athletes in it, and we taught them, like, you talk like you write, and you write like you read. So if you're not reading, if you're not writing, if you're not filling your brain and seeking knowledge, then I don't care how good-looking you are. Like, you'll survive for a little while, or how talented you are at being a presenter. You got to have other tools in your toolbox, especially now, and I think you want them. So that's a huge part of what I try to share to the up-and-coming generation of broadcasters, because it can be perceived, man, as it's got to be about me and my face and my voice and my TikTok, and that's all good, but you got to know how to tell a story. And I still think there's fundamental principles, as you know, which is why I love your writing, and then you've got the crossover element, obviously, of your show, and vice versa, and you know, they play hand-in-hand with one another.
Our guest, Yogi Roth, Pac-12 Network. How are you doing with the show on Saturday nights? I'm looking forward to I'm finally going to get to see it because Oregon and Oregon State are playing early. I'll be able to tune in and watch you in the evening. What are you guys doing with that show? How much fun are you having?
You know, it's really cool. Like for me, this is my 15th year doing this profession, and I'm used to calling games. That's what I've done for my whole career. Saturdays, I'm calling a game, and then I'll come on the post-game show and go global or go deep dive if it's a good game. But for me to not be on site on a campus, it's hard, to be really blunt. I mean, I love that part of the craft because I also think studio guys can, you know, you get stale after 3 weeks because you're not talking to anybody, right? You don't really know what's going on campus unless you're there or you're really connected. So once I found out that we weren't going to do games and I was going to do games on the Pac-12 networks, positioning and shifting to the studio became a really fun challenge for me. To not only go deep, because I would do that anywhere on every team, but really be prepared to, for only 7 weeks and 7 hours, basically, can I bring it? And then can we bring it? And can we bring something that's different? Right? We're already going to be different because no one in the country is going to go deep on Pac-12 football, right? You watch ESPN and they're going to give you the highlights of Keaton Slovis, and that's pretty much it. One or two plays from every game if you're lucky. Our job is to take you to the places that you want to go as a super fan. Or if you've been busy all day, like you, if you're working a game, what happened? And I think doing that in this new title, Pac-12 After Dark, has been fun because we've embraced, obviously, the phrase that everybody's used around the country, and it's laid back. I mean, basically, the only thing we're missing is a beer, which would be fun, probably a little maybe inappropriate for live television. But that is the vibe, and Ashley and Nigel are awesome to work with because it's fun, it's playful, but we know, you know, I always say meet people where they sweat. We want to meet our audience where they sweat. You know, they had a long day. They want to enjoy an hour of fun, insight, some arguments, right, some positioning for the conference. And it's our job and my job to bear that burden of responsibility. And I love that, man. Like, I really have enjoyed it for the first 2 weeks. And our team is busting it. You know, like, you know what it's like in the Bay Area, the nerves, the anxiety around COVID-19. And we're all coming in. And, you know, you make sure you're prepared. And everybody's super respectful from distancing and masking, and there's all these other things. And then you add in the lives that we all have in our homes. We're trying to look at it as, what can we do for an hour to give people a break? And I've never felt that in more powerful way than this year in this show. So, yeah, I'm really proud of it. And there's nothing like that that's obviously been on our network, but I've never seen a college football show like this. It could be a national show or otherwise. So I'm really proud of it, and I like standing on the table for it, obviously.
Yogi, in the South, is Colorado for real? I mean, they're sitting at 2-0. I'm watching USC use the last possession to win games. How wide open does the South feel to you?
It's really fun. I mean, I think so. I mean, the position I've kind of taken, like, if Auburn was 2-0, right, or if Michigan was 2-0, right, what would the narrative be? Well, Colorado's 2-0. Yeah, I love them up because they've looked the part. In their games, they haven't looked perfect because nobody has. You know, COVID-19 has hit everybody. You could argue them even harder because when camp started, it hit them. Right, that's when it got Colorado versus, you know, California schools was a little bit different in that regard. And to me, they're playing really good complementary football. And that phrase is probably thrown out very often, but when I see it, it's can you keep the defense on a little bit of an edge? Right. So when you look at them percentage-wise with formations and personnel groupings. And what they're doing with the zone read, the run-pass option game, and surprisingly, the mid-range passing game at Sam Noyer, it's impressive. And defensively, same deal. I mean, they remind me of Arizona and Paul Rhodes in terms of they're always in the right spot. Like, they're very well coached. The horses they play with this year are a year older than the guys like Terrence Lang, Carson Wells. Like, last year they struggled. They were a little overmatched physically, I thought, and they were playing a year early in my eyes. And now they've got some experience because of the injuries they had last year in a few key positions that I'm impressed. You know, I think the name of the game this year is going to be availability. You know, to be quite honest with you, like, we're going to see teams before games lose multiple starters, right? And so it's how can you handle COVID-19? And then when given the opportunity, like third down, backed up, situational football, can you maximize it? And Sam's done that. So, yeah, I think they're real. I think they should be in the conversation because any other team that's undefeated would be. So that's somehow I'm going to talk about them. And regarding the South being open, I still think SC has the roster, right? I think they have the personnel. And I think we have to take into consideration Southern California and COVID-19 because that has been different. Right? They got in their weight room a few days before training camp started, right? So their O-line getting pushed around a little bit, right? They had their backup center last week. You could feel that on film watching that game back a couple nights ago. So I expect them this weekend, clearly it's the biggest test. And you look at their schedule, it's the biggest test. And then what isn't getting any play is every team they've played has not played a game yet. And Colorado will have a bye. Right? So kind of a brutal schedule in that regard. We didn't expect that or anticipate it when it got released, but that's their reality. And I think that's worth a footnote.
Yeah, I think it's unprecedented for a team to go that many weeks having played a team that is undefeated and rested, and here comes another opponent. UCLA's going to Oregon. Can Dorian Thompson-Robinson and UCLA, are they a threat in Eugene? Can they win a big road game?
Well, I don't know if he's going to play. I mean, I don't know if something's changed in the last 30 minutes. I know it's reported that he might not. So if he does, I think it gives them their best opportunity to do it. The thing is for UCLA, and I think everybody against Oregon this year, is you got to kind of play perfect. You know, and we haven't had a team like that in a little while, right? That's that balance, I think, on both sides of the ball. I think you have to. You know, Wazoo had a chance, but they didn't turn the turnovers into touchdowns. And you knew when that happened, you went into the half, you were like, all right, they gave them their best chance. Oregon survived it. They're probably going to run the ball here in the second half. I think it's going to be a lot of that in this game. But I think, you know, UCLA, they probably impressed me more than anybody last week because the way the game started, block, punt, pick, and then you look at what happened in the previous week, and you're like, oh, no, this isn't good. And they fought, man. They battled. And they battled in front of no fans, no student section. I mean, nobody. That, to me, like, I've seen a lot of character in teams. I'd say the same about SC. So I don't think that UCLA wins this game. I think they compete their tails off in it. I think they've improved defensively just from a structural standpoint. You watch them fit gaps. They didn't miss much against Cal, but they're going up against, you know how I feel about Tyler Shuck. He's going to be a Heisman candidate next year. He is a real dude. And with Joe Moorhead, who, you know, former GA at Pitt 20 years ago when I played, man, he's the first coach I ever met. He's brilliant. And what they're doing with the zone read game, how they're using their tight end, right, DJ, that is unbelievable what they're doing with him, movement with him, running the option at times, then run just straight at you, and the receivers, they'll get better. You know, like, I think when Micah Pittman comes back, that'll be a big lift, as I think we all assume he'll be coming back. I don't know the exact reason why we haven't seen him. But once they get back to full strength, this team, I think they're going to peak as the year goes on. And to me, when you look at their dudes, right, their dudes look just like Ohio State guys. Kayvon Thibodeau versus Sean Ryan is the matchup to watch. Noah Sewell, we talked about it on signing day, will be the best freshman and the face of this conference in years to come. And the guys that have replaced the opt-outs have played admirably and are gaining experience. So I'm all in on the Ducks. I think right now they look like the best team in the Pac-12.
Pac-12 Network's Yogi Roth is with us. Oregon State, I felt like, turned a corner. They had Washington on its heels. They're driving the ball on them. They have a bad break, third down, fourth down. I think Jonathan Smith, to his credit, has not made that a big deal. It's nothing he can do about it. It would be a distraction. But they have nothing to show for it but an 0-2 record at the start of this season. Can we say they've turned a corner before they get a result?
No, I can't. And here's why. And I talked to Jonathan about it in the offseason, and I wrote about it in my notebook this week on the Pac-12 Network's website. I just think, and I think I've been using this quote for a couple of years now, and I'm pretty sure it's Bobby Bowden, but you lose big, you lose small, you win big. That was a four-year program rebuild. And they got to find a way to win small. It's three of their last four losses are by 10 points. And I think that is like, you know, and the team knows it, right? And they should come out this weekend saying, okay, it's a play in the second quarter. It's three plays in the third. All the things that Coach Smith has shown his team, that's where they need to thrive. Like, yeah, I'm with you. Like, spot, of course, wasn't great. But it can't come down to that, in my opinion, or just that. And I think that's why you don't see him making it a big deal. Him saying, guys, it's a couple plays. It's a drive where we make the wrong read or we don't pick up a blitz. Those are the things that I think turn the corner. And they'll have the opportunity this week against Cal, right? Cal has, you know, been dealt a really challenging hand regarding practicing, you know, a real challenging hand regarding California. I mean, they practice on one field, right? They practice at the stadium. I believe California rules only allow 75 people on a practice field at a time. So UCLA has practice fields that are side by side. So the whole team could be out there, right? 75 guys on a field, per se. And not that they have that equal number of 75 plus 75, but you get the point. So I think this is a weekend. I expect Jamar Jefferson to get a ton of touches because, man, he looks the part. And I think Tristan Jebbia, who I love that you have him on your show, he needs to play like the guy that you know, he can be. You know, it wasn't good enough to his standard. And I think that's fair to say. I don't think that's being critical. I think that's saying your expectation is to deal, you know, make spot throws on critical downs. And that's what they're going to have to do, I think. So they get a win this weekend. Yeah, the corners turn if they can win a close game. But to me, that's what they have to do.
What is the biggest question for you in the conference as you sort of look at what you want to know from this weekend? And I still think Washington fans are feeling good about Jimmy Lake, but maybe in the back of their minds they're going, okay, we need a little more sample size than what happened against Oregon State. But what's the biggest question in your mind?
Well, it's I hate to state the obvious, man, but it's who's quarterback at Utah. You know, I just don't, you don't know, right? Think about it. It's the last team in FBS football to play. I know there's a bunch of reports out there, but that's the thing I can't wait to see. It's who they are. And then really their secondary, how do they make plays on the ball? I mean, they're going to start two freshmen at corner, true freshmen. Right? Nate Ritchie, who I believe is an in-state, big-time recruit, and then, you know, their biggest recruit in program history, a DB on the other side, a corner, was one time committed to Ohio State. A really talented group, but playing the ball in college is way different than playing it in high school. And you saw it a couple years ago at the Coliseum when SC made chunk plays. That's going to be the challenge. So that's the unknown because we have nothing to look at. And then I'm really looking forward to the bounce-back quality of UW's receivers. Too many drops for that group. They're really talented. Puka Nacua has a chance to be all-conference wideout. He should be. That group, you know, there's big expectations there. And I'm looking forward to seeing it because I think they will. I think by the end of the year, it's going to benefit Oregon, UW's growth, because UW, Oregon, in the final regular season game, man, it's going to be championship-esque. Then you add in a potential championship game the following week for, you know, whoever the North rec may be, if they're undefeated, and you got a real case for the college football playoff. When you really look at, I think, how these teams hopefully will project if they can stay safe and not let COVID-19, probably the biggest opponent of all, take one of their position groups down or some key players that we've seen, you know, just the last couple hours with the quarterback in this conference going down.
You talk about good stories, uplifting stories. You got a good story for us?
Yeah, I got a lot of good stories for you, man. You all want to Pac-12 football or you want to go outside Pac-12?
You pick. What came to mind when I said that?
What came to mind when you said that was, I was thinking about it today. I took my 5-year-old to the beach at sunrise this morning. And as I referenced earlier, you know, we've all have our challenges in this year. And, you know, I'm not short of my own. And I looked out to the beach and, you know, I thought about my mom who had passed away, as I referenced a month ago. Yeah. And I didn't know what it would be like to lose a parent. And I thought about it as I was kind of getting ready for your show. You know, what she taught me was something that I hope to pass on to a bunch of athletes, which is you're not defined by the plays that you make in your career. And I say that because I think back to my last game playing, and this season is going to be over before we know it. And we played Virginia in the Continental Tire Bowl, which I don't even know if it exists anymore. But it was in Charlotte against Matt Schaub and UVA, and they beat us. And it was the last drive of the game, and all I wanted to do my whole career was score a touchdown, like my whole career. And I was the guy, John, at 4 a.m., I'd wake up and I'd work out. And the last 12 catches that I would make in my workout were all game winners. And I'd have the schedule memorized, and I'd go down, and I'd say, okay, you're in the bowl game, and Rothlines, and I'd call my own game. He's in the slot, he's in motion, it's press coverage, you're at the corner out, and a touchdown, Panthers. And the game was in the last drive, last minute of the game, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to go in. my story has to end like this, because I hadn't scored yet. I had made plays. I started in games. I got a scholarship, but I never scored. And our quarterback sack caused fumble. Game's over. And I was so angry, so frustrated, and I was mad at the game. See, the game screwed me. Like, how did this happen? I did everything you could have asked of a player. Everything right. And then I walked outside, and she was the first person to greet me, and she gave me a big hug. And she said, she whispered in my ear, she said, "Yogi, no matter how many times you thought you should have scored on the field, like, you've scored so many more in life." And I think about that now with two kids and, you know, my life amazing, right? With a support system, and I get to have my dream job. I call games. I live on the West Coast. I travel to amazing communities. I'm inspired by incredible coaches and, you know, young student athletes and what I call the next generation of leaders, as they're the current generation of learners. And I sit back and I say, I hope other athletes aren't prisoners of the moment, but products of the process. And I mentor a lot of athletes now because of this pandemic. I've connected to so many student athletes. That's what I hope they take away. And I don't know, as I looked out of the ocean today, that's where I always connect to my mom, and I could talk to her, and I was like, "Hey, how you doing?" And that story came to mind. So, yeah, that's one that that had an impact on me, because I needed it, because I was really mad at the game. And I think athletes sometimes, when it doesn't go well, right, you know, next couple hours you're going to hear about a couple more kids out of games because of COVID-19. It's not going as they expected. Their draft status isn't what they expected. They thought they might leave early but haven't played in enough games. Like, just to remember that you're a product of the process, and don't be a prisoner of the moment. And I would never have thought that way if it wasn't for her and that dialogue at the end of my playing career.
Yogi Roth, Pac-12 Network. Catch him Saturday night on the Pac-12 Network. Thank you, sir. Have a great day. I appreciate you.
Yeah, hey, congratulations on your foundation. Let's compete to make that thing happen and impact as many kids as we can. So let me know how I can help, brother.
I love it. You already have, Yogi. I appreciate you, man. Yogi Roth, be where your feet are. Says it all the time. You can give right now by calling 503-417-7575 until 3 o'clock today. You have a dollar-for-dollar match for every donation that you offer. Judah Newby, where do we stand on the Birch's Shoes 4 gift cards? Are they still available, all 4, or have any of those been given away?
We still have a couple available, okay. Absolutely. And Eugene's crowd is wanting it.
All right. If you're in Eugene and you shop at Birch's Shoes, we have a couple of gift cards still available, $25 gift cards. If you make a $50 donation to the BFT Foundation, we will send you one of the $25 gift cards. First couple people to call in at 503-417-7575. If you are anywhere else, and in fact, shoemill.com, you could be worldwide here, and shop on their website. But Shoemill Shoe Stores is offering a $25 gift card if you make a $50 donation right now. So when those run out, we will no longer be able to offer them. So grab them while you can. It would be a great Christmas gift for you to give to somebody. And you're helping a kid, a classroom, a teacher, a family by helping the Bald-Faced Truth Foundation. 503-417-7575 is a number. You can also check out the auction items at bftauction.com. We've got some things that are brand new that have just been put on that website. So please check back frequently and leave it here.